This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The number of deaths from COVID-19 virus worldwide is now more than 170,000 people, with nearly 2.5 million confirmed cases. In the United States, the death toll is pushing toward 43,000, and the number of infections is nearly 800,000. Governors from both parties in the United States are pushing back after U.S. President Donald Trump accused Democrats of playing a very dangerous political game by insisting there is a shortage of tests for the coronavirus. The governors countered Monday that the White House must do more to help states do the testing that's needed before they can ease up stay-at-home orders. Supply shortages have stymied U.S. testing for weeks. The needs range from basic supplies like swabs and protective gear to highly specialized laboratory chemicals needed to analyze patient results. The governor in the U.S. state of Colorado says a statewide stay-at-home order will expire next week. Democratic Governor Jared Polis says that he will allow a gradual reopening of non-essential businesses and permit surgical procedures and other activities suspended by the coronavirus fight, as long as strict social distancing and other individual protective measures continue. He credited widespread compliance with statewide social distancing and shelter-in-place orders for an apparent leveling of a COVID-19 hospitalization. The governor urged residents who can work at home to continue to do so. Georgia's governor plans to restart the state's economy for the end of the week. He says many businesses that closed to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus could reopen as early as Friday. Georgia's timetable is one of the most aggressive in the nation. It would allow gyms, hair salons, bowling alleys, and tattoo parlors to reopen as long as owners follow strict social distancing and hygiene requirements. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The South Korean government on Tuesday said it was looking into U.S. media reports saying North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was in fragile condition after surgery. Officials from South Korea's Unification Ministry and National Intelligence Service said they could not immediately confirm that report. CNN cited an anonymous U.S. official who said Kim was in grave danger for an unspecified surgery. The Unification Ministry, which deals with inter-Korean affairs, said it could not confirm another report by Daily NK, which cited anonymous sources to report that Kim was recovering from heart surgery in the capital Pyongyang and that his condition was improving. Speculation about Kim's health was raised after he missed the celebration of his late grandfather and state founder Kim Il-sung on April 15th. The Trump administration and Congress are struggling to seal an agreement on more than $450 billion to help small businesses hurt by the coronavirus, but both sides insist a final pact is within reach. President Trump says he expects a Senate vote hopefully on Tuesday. As talks continue, the contours of the deal appear largely set. Most of the funding would go to boost a small business payroll loan program that's out of money. Additional help would be given to hospitals, and billions more would be spent to boost testing for the virus. The planned expansion of a number of cemeteries in Rio de Janeiro City has been accelerated in response to the coronavirus pandemic, with 5,000 burial niches and graves now under construction. According to a representative for the company, which manages seven cemeteries in the city, additional workers were hired in February. And the company has purchased protective gear and provided training for the workers in dealing with the victims of COVID-19. Rio de Janeiro is a state with the second highest number of victims and confirmed cases in the country. It is also one of several states applying restrictive measures to avoid the spread of the virus, measures rejected by the Brazilian president, Jair Bolsonaro. The Trump administration has appealed a court order requiring the U.S. Border Patrol to provide beds, blankets, showers, quality food, and medical evaluations to migrants held in many Arizona facilities longer than 48 hours. That appeal filed Monday did not list a reason. The government has argued that the no constitutional violations have been proven and that it's taken steps to reduce time in custody. The judge ruled for migrants who sued in 2015 over what they called dangerously crowded and inhumane conditions in Arizona's Tucson sector. Now, the judge issued the final order last week calling for actual beds and washable blankets. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 21st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi agrees to provide allowances for health workers during COVID-19.
We are now at war with the coronavirus. And the position of government, obviously, is that we have to take care of our healthcare workers because these are the people that are going to fight this war.
Japi Mwango is Malawi's Minister of Health. Zimbabwe extends coronavirus lockdown by 2 weeks. The WHO worries that U.S. funding cuts will deter its efforts to control the spread of the coronavirus in Africa. Rights groups sound the alarm about the rise in domestic violence in Kenya during coronavirus. And a Uganda member of parliament is arrested for violating COVID-19 lockdown measures.
Any activity that is in conflict with the physical distance or control of crowds during this period, we do charge them under disobedience of lawful orders and negligent acts that are likely to spread the infection of the coronavirus.
Fred Enanga is Uganda's police spokesperson, and as Guinean President Alpha Conde builds a dam, thousands are left without compensation. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Malawi government has agreed to provide risk allowances to healthcare workers who have been holding strikes to demand the allowances and personal protective equipment. A memo was sent Monday, April 20th, to hospital directors and district commissioners. The Secretary for Health said health workers will be given allowances according to each worker's paid grade. He said the rates will be effective from this month and would last only during the coronavirus crisis. Over the weekend, the Minister of Health, Japi Mwango, cautioned health workers not to take advantage of the coronavirus crisis by making unrealistic financial demands. On Monday, he said his ministry has distributed to all hospitals all the supplies necessary to deal with COVID-19. We spoke with Minister Mwango before Monday's developments. First, we asked him about his warning to health workers not to take advantage of the coronavirus situation.
We are now at war with the coronavirus, not only in Malawi, but the world over. And obviously in that situation, you will come across cadres asking for this and that. And the position of government, obviously, is that we have to take care of our healthcare workers because these are the people that are going to fight this war. And His Excellency the President, Professor Peter Mutharika, directed my ministry to ensure that we revise healthcare workers' risk allowances. That process is currently underway. But since this process do not take as soon as people think, our cadres will begin to start complaining. That's where perhaps we needed to caution our healthcare workers to make sure that as the process is being handled, they must continue providing services to patients.
Mr. Minister, if I'm not mistaken, I think the nurses had demanded a certain percentage of their salary because they claimed that the government did the same with doctors.
You know, in an employer and employee situation, you always come across an employer asking for this and that. And it is very correct that the healthcare workers were asking for a certain percentage of their salaries to constitute a risk allowance. It will have to be a matter of dialogue between the healthcare workers and government. We'll have to get to a common understanding as to what would be payable. Also take into account that we have to also look at the economic situation prevailing in the country. So any demand will have to follow in that kind of situation.
How has your government done so far, Mr. Minister, in terms of providing personal protective equipment that the nurses have been demanding all along?
The issue of PPEs, personal protective equipment, has been an issue that has, in a way, affected our healthcare workers to the extent that they've been complaining that they have not been provided with the same. However, the situation on the ground is that we do have PPEs that have been made available to us through UNICEF. You will recall that not long time ago, we were preparing for the fight against Ebola, and that equipment is available. It was made available to a number of our facilities, including tertiary facilities, but it may not be as adequate as one may want to believe. However, government and its cooperating partners, UNICEF and others, are currently in the process of procuring additional PPEs to be provided to our healthcare workers. That process is underway. We've made sure that the process are shortened to ensure that we procure the equipment in the shortest possible time. And as I speak, maybe the next day or two, we should be able to provide our healthcare workers with the additional PPEs. We've just received some equipment, including PPEs, from China.
Malawi's Minister of Health, Japi Mwango, was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Ugandan police are warning citizens to abide by the government's restrictions to help stop the spread of the coronavirus. The warnings followed the arrest of parliamentarian Francis Zaake for violating a presidential directive by distributing food to residents of his constituency. While some Ugandans welcome parliamentarian Zaake's arrest, others have called for his release, saying this was not the time for politics. But Ugandan police spokesperson Fred Enanga tells viewers Peter Clotty that officers will continue to enforce the law.
Yeah, what I can tell you is that government created the National Task Force with the main objective of fundraising and also seeking donations from well-wishers and members from the private sector, individuals, manufacturers, politicians and companies that could support government initiatives in ensuring that families that are vulnerable and struggling to afford food within Uganda during this period of the pandemic are actually supported. So government came up with additional protocols to facilitate the donation of quality food items that are fit for human consumption by ensuring that all donations are certified by Uganda National Bureau of Standards and also distributed in an orderly manner whereby the distributing task teams are screened to further reduce the risk of spreading the virus to vulnerable families benefiting from the food donations. So we have incidents where individuals, including politicians, came out to bypass this arrangement, and which is seen as a threat to the communities and even vulnerable families.
So Fred, what charges is he facing following his arrest, and how soon will he go to court?
Now, for any individual group or groups of individuals that are flouting these guidelines and protocols by the National Task Force in close coordination with the Minister of Health, are being charged under the offenses of disobedience of lawful orders following the public health protocols. There was a statutory order that was enacted in support of the fight against the COVID-19. And whereby it comes up with controls on number of crowds and issues to do with physical distance and social distancing. And any activity that is in conflict with the physical distance or control of crowds during this period, we do charge them under disobedience of lawful orders and negligent acts that are likely to spread the infection of the coronavirus.
Fred, some Ugandans are saying the arrest of the politician or the member of parliament should serve as a deterrent to others who'd want to flout the guidelines with the aim to protect Ugandans from the spread of the coronavirus. Others are saying he's being targeted. What is the stance of the Ugandan police?
Now, our major priority here is to ensure that all activities that are being carried out are in agreement with the interventions that are in place meant at curbing the spread of the coronavirus in Uganda. And now when it comes to issues where certain activities are in conflict or compromise the safety of Ugandans during this period, then definitely we shall come out strongly with strict enforcement mechanisms.
Ugandan police spokesperson Fred Nanga was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty from Kampala. Zimbabwe has extended a nationwide coronavirus lockdown by 2 weeks. The country has 25 confirmed infections so far and 3 deaths. Public health experts welcome the extended restrictions, but business and traders say they need relief to survive the economic damage. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
In a televised evening address, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said Zimbabwe was not yet in a position to end the lockdown aimed at containing the spread of COVID-19 as transmission rates were rising in the country and in the world over.
Guided by these realities and to allow ourselves greater leeway to prepare for worse times which are likely ahead, government has decided to extend with immediate effect the national lockdown by a further 14 days up to 3rd May 2020. It has been a very hard decision my government has had to take reluctantly, but it has been a necessary and unavoidable decision in the circumstances in which we find ourselves. Government is acutely aware of the need to keep the economy running, albeit at subdued levels.
He said nothing about demands from the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce, which has called for a reduction in the value-added tax and a lowering of interest rates to rescue struggling businesses. The informal sector of Zimbabwe's economy is also demanding help. Semu Wadzai leads the Vendors Initiative of activist group Social and Economic Transformation Zimbabwe. He said vendors are not happy with the lockdown extension as they have yet to receive grants promised last month.
Surely this means the continuation of suffering, hunger, deprivation of the informal economy. So we call upon, further call upon the government to ensure that they quickly disperse these funds so that people will not end up starving.
Robert Chivambu, the spokesman of Amnesty International in Southern Africa, says Harare must enact measures to ease hunger during the lockdowns. Even before the coronavirus, the UN's World Food Programme said more than 4.3 million Zimbabweans urgently needed assistance.
So we are really calling on the government of Zimbabwe to provide some social protection measures to uphold the right to food. The measures to address food insecurity could include food subsidies for those living in poverty and directly providing for those who are unable to provide for themselves.
Zimbabwe's Association of Doctors for Human Rights said it welcomed the lockdown extension. Association Chief Fortune Nyamande said any partial lifting of restrictions must be done cautiously.
There's need for the Minister of Health to then come up with clear enabling guidelines which ensure that these facilities will not be abused, becoming vectors of transmission for COVID-19.
But Nyamande said the group is concerned about the lack of measures to help the hungry and poor. There's been concerns that Zimbabweans are disobeying social distance rules during the lockdown while scrambling for food items in short supply, such as cornmeal. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 21st. The World Health Organization is fearful that funding cuts announced by the United States will deter its efforts to control the spread of the coronavirus in Africa. Aside from coronavirus, the WHO says it is concerned that vaccine-preventable diseases could also spread as countries are forced to cancel vaccination programs. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
The U.S. is the main funder of WHO programs linked to malaria, polio, and HIV/AIDS in Africa. Currently, the U.S. has pledged $400 million to the WHO's $4.8 billion 2020-2021 budget. While its pledges are mostly locked in for this year, WHO officials expect the US funding suspension to start biting in 2021. Michelle Yao, Emergency Operations Program Manager at the WHO's Regional Office for Africa, spoke to VOA via a messaging app.
This support is what helped to provide technical support or even to have a technical position in a country. Some of them, a program like malaria, need to have a continuous support based in a WHO country office. So all this technical position and also work that is required while convening experts to work on a specific guideline for a given disease, this is also the funding was helping, and sometime even in some of the supply, maybe on the HIV issues. So all this, of course, will suffer if this gap is not covered.
For COVID-19 prevention efforts, the WHO has repurposed many of its staff to deal with the outbreak. While money has been set aside for 2020, question marks hang over those roles for next year.
In the case of COVID, some of the these technical people that has been repurposed. And of course, most of them got the contract extended, but maybe from next year, if we don't have enough funds and we have to cut on staff, it will also affect, because some of them have been repurposed based on that. If this shortage is continues, it will definitely affect our HR plan for next year.
Yao denounced claims that the WHO was slow to respond to the coronavirus outbreak, or that the organization has been too China-centric. He said that a team of international experts was sent to Wuhan, where the original outbreak occurred, as early as January 1st to report on the scale and danger of the outbreak. The WHO, in partnership with other UN agencies, has begun delivering personal protective equipment around Africa by using Addis Ababa as its central cargo hub. World Food Programme planes last week began delivering emergency health workers across the region. But a sheer lack of basic and technical equipment such as ventilators and clinical care beds are troubling many policymakers in the region. John Nkangasong, director of the Africa CDC, told reporters last week that at least 10 countries in Africa have no ventilators whatsoever. Another major concern for health authorities in Africa is the impact the COVID-19 crisis will have on other diseases. According to the WHO, Guinea, Ethiopia, South Sudan and Chad have already postponed mass vaccination campaigns for measles that were due to take place between March and June. The WHO fears it will see vaccine-preventable diseases like measles, rubella, polio and diphtheria become more commonplace. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Rights activists in Kenya have raised alarm after indications that gender-based violence may be on the rise with restrictions on movements due to coronavirus. Kenya has more than 280 reported cases of COVID-19 so far and at least 14 deaths. Rael Ombuo has more from Nairobi.
48-year-old community organizer Jane Anyango has for years documented cases of gender-based violence in Nairobi's Kibera neighborhood, Africa's largest urban slum. But since Kenya announced restrictions on movements over coronavirus, she says the number of reported cases has increased. 2 weeks ago, a 13-year-old girl called Anyango when her parents started to physically fight.
I got my report from a child, which was really sad, that there is no peace in their home. And that is why, to me, this is very unique. Because mothers and fathers do fight here, but when it bothers the children, then it's more than what people should take, you know. And then, you know, with the curfew, then most conflicts happen at night or late in the evening. So they feel they're not even run out.
Kenya in March imposed a nationwide nighttime curfew and restrictions on public gatherings and transportation. Schools went to remote learning and many people began working from home. However, Kenyans who rely on a daily wage in markets or through manual labor suddenly found themselves struggling to put food on the table as shops closed down and economic activity came to a halt. Wangeshi Washira is director of the Kenya Feminist Center for Rights Education and Awareness. She says the center has seen an increase in reported cases of violence against women.
In our office, in a day, we receive between 3 to 7 cases.
And these are cases either someone just walks into the office or someone makes a call. But within this period, we have seen those numbers go up. I think just last week, we had about an increase from 7 cases to about between 10 to 12.
Agnes Odhiambo is a researcher on sub-Saharan Africa with the Women's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. During coronavirus restrictions, says Odhiambo, a large spike in violence against women is almost certain.
Gender-based violence or violence happens are mainly for two issues. One is an issue of power and control, and two is an issue of inequality. Now, this is the situation that COVID has created, where people are there behind closed doors, there's no money, is a perfect environment for people who are abusive to even be more abusive, or even for those who are not usually abusive to become abusive because of that stress where they feel the need to exert their dominance in an environment where they are feeling kind of emasculated.
Rights groups say until coronavirus restrictions are relaxed, cases of gender-based violence in Kenya will only rise. They also note that when so many people remain behind closed doors, most of the violence will go unreported. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
A part of Guinean President Alpha Condé's legacy, as he most likely goes for a third term this year, is building the Swapiti Dam. The project, being built by China International Water Electric, is also part of China's Belt and Road Initiative in Africa. Human Rights Watch looked at how the dam was being built, especially how the companies and government involved were treating about 16,000 people who are impacted by having to leave their lands. Senior researcher Jim Warmington tells Ricky Shryak that these people have not received proper compensations.
We see thousands of people living on very densely packed and constrained areas of land, and really during this coronavirus crisis, not even having the basic essentials that they need to eat and survive and to continue to live their lives. So it's a really tragic situation.
Were they cut off from their agricultural farming? You know, were they placed into lands that had the same kind of potential for farmland?
No, so what's happened, I mean, the dam itself is very large, and many of the agricultural lands for the people that have been moved were in that reservoir site. So even if the reservoir hasn't flooded the land yet, it certainly will do as the dam is completed in the next few years. And those people will lose that land. That land is not going to come back. And the Ghanaian government's position, as it is in many of these types of projects, whether it be mining projects or dam projects, is that that land doesn't belong, legally at least, to villagers. Their position is this is land that belongs to the state. So what that means is that your family who's farmed these areas for generations, your father, your grandfather, that long-standing exploitation and occupation of the land isn't recognized, and you end up on a new site with a house, sure, without any of the farmland that you depended on for so long. And that reflects a problem that's true within much of West Africa, which is the failure of legal systems and governments and development projects to recognize the traditional and customary land rights that people have had for so long.
How important is the role of, the traditional way of looking at land ownership in a place like Guinea, and the fact that it's trying to now navigate in a more, Western/capitalistic, model of land ownership? You know, is that one of the main issues in this, really?
Yeah, it's absolutely the main issue. And customary traditional land ownership is the way that land is owned in rural Guinea, 99% of the time. And yet, unfortunately, you have a legal system and you have governments and companies that simply fail to address that and reflect that in the way that they take land.
Jim Warmington, senior researcher in Human Rights Watch's Africa Division, is speaking to Ricky Stryak from Virginia. And that's it for this Tuesday, April 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you have a great day.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation. Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Thank you.